The following podcast is brought to you by the Media Studies and Communication Department at Dominican University of California. Lock your doors, check under the bed, and turn on a nightlight because it's about to get scary. I, DJ Ghost, will be your guide through all things paranormal. Listen at your own risk because when you listen, you won't be able to sleep tonight. You better keep one eye open. Welcome back to When I Open. I'm your host DJ Ghost, and today we're going to be talking about UFOs, alien sightings, and the history of it. In the 1940s and 50s, reports of flying saucers became an American culture phenomenon. Sightings of strange objects in the sky became the raw materials for Hollywood to present visions of potential threats. Connected to ongoing ideas about life on the moon, canals on Mars, and ideas about Martian civilizations, flying saucers have come to represent the hopes and fears of the modern world. Many questions like, are these alleged visitors from other worlds peaceful or benevolent, or would they attack and destroy humanity, arose. The destructive power of the atomic bomb called into question the progressive potential of technology. Fear of the possibilities for destruction in the Cold War era proved fertile ground for terrestrial anxieties to manifest visions of flying saucers and visitors from other worlds who might be hidden among us in plain sight. If UFOs were visiting our world, where were these extraterrestrials? Could they be hidden among us? Comic books and television illustrates how the possibility of extraterrestrial worlds reflected anxieties in the era. The 1962 comic There Are Martians Among Us from Amazing Fantasy No. 15 illustrates the way fear of extraterrestrials could reflect Cold War anxieties. In the comic, a search party gathers around a landed alien aircraft, but it can find no sign of alien beings. Radio announcers warn those nearby to stay indoors. The action shifts to a husband and his wife as he prepares to leave their home despite a television announcer warning them to remain indoors. As he waves goodbye, he reminds the wife to stay inside. The wife, however, decides to slip out to the store and is attacked and dragged off. The husband returns home and, finding it empty, runs towards the telephone in a panic. In a twist, the anxious husband reveals that he and his wife are the Martians. The fear that there might be alien enemies in our midst resonates with the fears of Soviets and communists from the McCarthy era. Ultimately, in the story, the humans are the ones who accost and capture the alien woman. The shift in perspective puts the humans in the position of the monsters. Aside from the depictions in UFOs and media, UFOs are also a part of American folk culture. Ideas of aliens and flying saucers are a part of the mythology of America. You can find documentation of these kinds of experiences in folklife collections. An interview with Howard Miller about hunting and hound dogs collected as a part of Tending the Commons, Folklife and Landscape in Southern West Virginia collection documents an individual's experience with a potential UFO sighting. In A Mysterious Light, a segment with an ethnographic interview, Miller describes a strange light he saw once while hunting with his dogs in 1966. Quote, "All at once it was daylight, and I looked up to see what happened. There was light about that big going up, drifting the hill. When I looked and seen it, just faded out. I had been in the Marines. I know what airplanes look like. It was too big for that. When he asked if he knew what he was offered, I don't know what it was, but went on to explain, if there's any such thing as UFOs, that's what it was." End quote. This unexplained light on a walk in the woods is typical of many stories of these kinds of encounters. It is not only the media that tells stories and represents these kinds of ideas. Documentation on the experiences and stories Americans tell each other is similarly important for understanding and interpreting what UFOs mean to 20th century America. Scientists and astronomers express varying degrees of enthusiasm for the possibility of intelligent life in the universe. However, scientists generally dismiss the idea that there are aliens visiting Earth. In Pale Blue Dot, A Vision of the Human Future in Space, Carl Sagan reviews the possibilities of alien visitors to the Earth and suggests that there is good reason to be skeptical of them. Much of Sagan's work focuses on debunking folk stories and beliefs and tries to encourage more rigorous and skeptical thought. He similarly discussed criticism of beliefs in alien visitors in his earlier book, Demon Haunted World, Science as a Candle in the Dark. This zealous criticism of belief in UFOs from Sagan, who was well known for his speculative ideas about the likelihood of alien civilizations, might seem to be a contradiction. Sagan himself has even speculated on the possibilities of visits by ancient aliens in his essay from the early 60s, Direct Contact Among Galactic Civilizations by Relativistic Interstellar Spaceflight. How do we reconcile Sagan the skeptic with the imaginative Sagan? Far from a contradiction, these two parts of Sagan's perspective offer a framework for understanding him and the interchange between science and myth about life on other worlds. Skepticism and speculative imagination come together as two halves of the whole. It is essential to entertain and explore new ideas, however strange, while at the same time testing and evaluating the validity of those ideas. In June 1947, a commercial pilot, Kenneth Arnold, claimed to have seen nine flying disc zipping across Washington State and the U.S. at 1,200 miles per hour. The editor of the East Oregon newspaper sent this utterly unverifiable story to the Associated Press News Service. And on June 26, Earth International put out a press release that contained the fateful term flying saucers. The story spread around the globe considerably faster than 1,200 miles per hour. Soon there were hundreds of other reported sightings, including one of the crashed flying saucer debris in Roswell, New Mexico. So these reports were clearly hoaxes. It wasn't hard to fake a saucer photograph if you had hubcap, frisbee, or pizza to hand. Some sightings, says Shale, were of weather balloons, zeppelins, cloud formations, and experimental aircraft being developed by the U.S. Air Force as part of the Cold War. And just to be open-minded about it, perhaps some of the sightings were of Martians who were hovering over sparsely populated parts of the Earth for the fun of it. But one thing was for certain, saucer mania had begun. Almost as remarkable as the saucer sightings was the fact that so many people wrote memoirs about them. One mass collection of these memoirs is the subject of his book, Flying Saucers Are Real, which includes excerpts from Those 60 Saucer People, Flying Saucers About the Scriptures, and Round Trip to Hell in a Flying Saucer. One choice example is George W. Van Tassel's I Wrote a Flying Saucer, which was published in 1852. He is honest enough to note that he didn't actually write in a flying saucer, says Womack, but the Space Brothers suggest that he give his work a more marketable title. As ludicrous as many of those supposedly nonfiction books were, though, there are some learned theses among them. Carl Jung, the Swiss psychiatrist, pondered the topic in Flying Saucers, A Modern Myth of Things Seen in the Sky, published in 1959. By this time, flying saucers had flown all the way through popular culture. Comics, unsurprisingly, were bursting with saucers. One special issue of EC Comics' Weird Science Fantasy in 1959 boasted, EC challenges the U.S. Air Force with its illustrated factual flying saucer report. In the world of animation, Chuck Jones' Bugs Bunny cartoon, Hair Devil Hair, introduced Marvin the Martian in 1948. He was piloting a Buck Soldier's rocket ship on this occasion. But when Marvin visited Bugs on Earth in the Hasty Hare 1952, he had traded up to a flying saucer. In November 1944, late into World War II, American fighter pilots started observing orange glowing lights. A few weeks later, one pilot saw a reddish, wingless, cigar-shaped object. The pilots named these Foo Fighters after a nonsense phrase used in a popular cartoon about firefighters. And yes, the band is named after this incident. The media got a hold of the story, and theories weren't far behind. Could they be optical illusions or a hallucination from the battle fatigue? Or could these be aerial phenomena, be super secret Nazi weapons? The last story was what captured the public's attention. After all, the pilots were flying in Axis territory, and plenty of rumors surrounded the German taste for outlandish science projects, like a Nazi lunar base, for example. In the end, it was never established exactly what these Foo Fighters were. While searching for Marine Corps C-46 transport plane, experienced pilot Kenneth Arnold diverted from his original path to help search the southwest slope of Mount Rainier. During the search, Arnold observed 9 peculiar-looking and possibly completely round objects flying in formation that reminded him of geese. It was later estimated they were flying in excess of 1,000 miles per hour. When he reported it, the Army Air Corps dismissed it as a mirage or hallucination. Within days, others came out in support of Arnold, saying they saw a similar aerial phenomena. Arnold said that the military dismissed his account and did interviews with local press. When he described to reporter Bill Paquette from the East Oregonian newspaper, what he saw looked saucer-like. Paquette termed them flying saucers, the first time the term was ever used. A few years later, the term UFO was coined by the Air Force. Prominently used in 1953, Robertson Pennell report, the same panel that dismissed Foo Fighters, the acronym seemed to prove purposeful in its lack of clarity. It's supposed to mean something unidentified, period, full stop, says Keane. It is a pretty reasonable term to use. It could mean anything. The first assumption of what Arnold and others had seen from the U.S. military and public was that it was the Soviets. The Cold War was quickly warming up in 1953, and atomic bomb testing, secret military exercises, and buildup of arms were all possibilities. There was a whole question about if they were Russian, but they wrote that off pretty early on because of the extreme sophistication of the technology. It was unimaginable that the Russians could have done something like this. In response to these late 1940 sightings, the Air Force set up a secret project with the codename SIGN to investigate these incidents. But the more the Air Force researched, the more stumped they became. There are so many documents that show the highest levels didn't know what they were. There was a divide between those who thought there was a more conventional answer, like a mirage, natural phenomena, inaccuracy, or secret military technology, to those who believed these aerial phenomena were not from this planet. A host of sightings in July 1952 included over Washington, D.C., led to the broadest admission that the U.S. government and military would make that there is indeed some sort of aerial phenomena soaring over U.S. airspace. With the project not being called Blue Book, the FBI was briefed by Major General John Sanford's office, the Director of Intelligence for the U.S. Air Force. The federal bureau of this investigation was told by a branch of the U.S. military that it was not entirely impossible that the object sighted may possibly be ships from another planet such as Mars. Other FBI memos stated that some military officials are seriously considering the possibility of these planetary ships. When Robertson Pinnell filed his report in early 1953, it came to two conclusions about how to best deal with these sightings as it related to the public. Meteors, mirages, non-occlusive clouds, and human-made objects, weather balloons, reflective aircrafts, and debunking. And that's exactly what federal authorities did for more than six decades. Through every sighting, incident, report, unexplained occurrence from Roswell to Area 51 to 2006 O'Hare sightings, the U.S. government and military has debunked or just as often remained silent about recent events suggesting a new strategy in the works. What made the December 16, 2017 New York Times article so shocking wasn't that it had on record very credible sources saying that the government had looked into UFOs recently. That much could probably be assumed based on the military's 1940s and 1950s histories with them. It's what they potentially discovered and found since that time. The $22 million Advanced Aerospace Threat Identification Program officially ran for about 5 years, from 2007 to 2012. This much was acknowledged by the Pentagon by Luis Elizondo, who headed the program until his 2017 resignation. In that time, Elizondo said the program had investigated a number of UAPs, including the ones that the U.S. Navy confirmed were authentic. The program also studied physical effects from encounters with the objects, the technology they could in theory do, and what those said they observed, and the possible threat it posed to national security. But the most jaw-dropping detail is one that's a bit buried. The program covers materials from these UAPs. I believe there's a lot going on behind the scenes. I think research is being done on those recovered materials to understand what they are. Alluding to the fact that the U.S. may not be the only country in possession of these materials, that there is a secretive global race associated with them. From what I've been told, it is a competitive thing. Whoever understands the technology first has a real advantage. My thought of it is that there is an undercurrent of competition among Russia, China, and the U.S. Sources have also said that the physics of how these objects move has already theoretically been cracked. What they figured out is very futuristic. It'd be very difficult to replicate, but they can't understand how it's done. Scientists and medical experts are also attempting to understand the biological effects on how humans who've come close to these phenomena. I think the government is changing how they deal with the reports of aerial phenomena. In this era of YouTube and cell phone cameras, it is becoming more common to see these types of videos. After all, more than two-thirds of Americans believe that the U.S. government knows more about UFOs than they are telling the public. I am convinced that there are unexplained aerial phenomena, but not convinced it's extraterrestrials. It's a valid hypothesis, but I don't think for a moment that we know what it is yet. Other hypotheses and speculations out there include interdimensions, time travelers, or super secret weapons or aircraft developed by another nation on this planet. It still is an unknown. What was once a mystery in ancient times remains a mystery today. In the end, you can only be certain of one thing. You are just stuck with something you can't explain. And that is all. Thank you so much for listening to my podcast today. Have an amazing rest of your day. I am your host, DJ Ghost, and remember to keep one eye open. See you next time.